Good morning. The Board of Supervisors is now in session. Would you all please rise and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No, go ahead, do that, because I don't see everybody is here yet.
With that, may we have any changes to the agenda, please?
You have a couple of changes to today's agenda. You have two added items under your closed session. Under under pending litigation, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, number 11, Bull versus County of San Luis Obispo, and 12, Murphy et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied, as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. That's your changes for today.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the presentation calendar. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move approval.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, we will ask Mr. Linthal to read Veterans Appreciation Month resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Milt, do you want to stand up and podium over here? With great pleasure that I get to read this proclamation for our veterans. Whereas the people of our community have great appreciation and admiration for the many local men and women who have served their country in the armed forces to protect and preserve the freedoms enjoyed by our community and by all Americans. And whereas in war, international conflicts, and peacekeeping missions, the men and women have been wounded, taken as prisoner, and or died in the line of duty. And whereas veteran workforce specialists, veteran employment support specialists, and other Employment Development Department staff are committed to ensuring that veterans receive the services and programs to which they are entitled, and to promoting employer interest in hiring veterans. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2005 as Veterans Appreciation Month in San Luis Obispo County, and urge all local employers, organized labor, veteran organizations, and other government leaders to support this worthy campaign to increase employment opportunities for the men and women who have faithfully served our nation in the military. Bill, would you step forward, please?
We have representation from all the major branches of the service here today, from the Navy.
Would you please speak into the microphone and give your name for the record, please?
Sure. I'm Milt Batson, and I'm the Veteran Workforce Specialist for the state of California here in San Luis Obispo County and also Santa Barbara County. I work for the Employment Development Department. And as you are aware, the Employment Development Department is an organization that is trying to promote employment among the citizens of our county and every other county in California. At this time, we have representation from each of the major branches, the Navy in the form of a Marine individual. We have an Army person who received 6 Purple Hearts and was a MASH unit leader. And we have the Coast Guard. So, and I'm a retired captain from the Air Force. So we have all branches represented here pretty well. If they'd please come up to the podium. On behalf of all of the veterans of all branches in San Luis Obispo County, we proudly accept.
We
proudly accept.
What happened?
I think our mic is off.
No, it's... We fortunately have young people who can do this.
Okay. We proudly accept this proclamation, and as the proclamation recommends, we urge the employers here in San Luis Obispo County to give serious consideration to the veterans of our county, because they have put their life on the line for us to maintain our lifestyle here in the United States of America and maintain the freedom to which we're so proud of and we so enjoy partaking of. Can you move just back just a little bit? I think they wanted to take a picture. So, having been in the military myself for in excess of 20 years, I can assure you that the loyalty that is given by all of the members of the military in each one of the branches is superlative. They deserve a great deal of credit, and I'm very proud to be one of their number. So with that, do any of you gentlemen have anything you wanted to say? Okay. You probably recognize this uniform. And for those of you that may not, this is a gentleman retired from the Marine Corps.
I'd like to thank the supervisors and the governor and all that have put out the proclamations. And I would like to thank them for those who we've left behind from Concord to Baghdad, those who have died in the line of combat. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I think we really appreciate the Board of Supervisors recognizing the veterans of our country and doing it so willingly and giving of their time for this county and putting the county first and trying to keep things running smoothly. And proud to know the members of the board here, and I've worked with them on different issues. So I just wanted to mention that we appreciate them also.
Thank you, Milt. Would you ask to step forward so we can get a picture in front of the board here?
Well, you thanked us, but it's we who really, truly thank you. So with that, we will move on to Supervisor Shajian.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to honorable colleagues. It gives me great honor to read this resolution recognizing the 98th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. But prior to reading this resolution, I would like us to take a moment of silence in honor of all nations who suffered from genocide, massacre, Holocaust, and also in honor of those all-American veterans, military personnel who gave up their lives to protect ours and our freedom. Would that please join me in a moment of silence? Thank you. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas Armenians living in their historic homeland in Asia Minor
were subjected to severe persecution and brutal injustice by the Turkish rulers of the Ottoman Empire before and after the turn of the 20th century, including widespread acts of destruction, mayhem, and murder during the period from 1894 to 1896 and again in 1909. And whereas the horrible experience of the Armenians at the hands of their Turkish oppressors culminated with what is known by historians as the first genocide of the 28th century, or the Forgotten Genocide. And whereas the Armenian genocide began with the murder of hundreds of Armenian intellectuals and political, religious, and business leaders who were arrested and taken from their homes in Constantinople before dawn on April 24, 1915. And whereas the Young Turk regime, then in control of the empire, planned and executed the unspeakable atrocities committed against the Armenians from 1915 through 1923, including the torture, the starvation, and murder of 1.5 million Armenians, dead marches into the Syrian desert, and the exile of more than 500 innocent people. So I'll take a little break and have my friend here help me out.
Thank you, Ketchum. Whereas the United States Ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Henry Morgenthau Sr., stated, "Whatever crimes the most perverted instincts of the human mind can desire, and whatever refinements and persecutions and injustice most vast imagination can conceive, became the daily misfortunes of these devoted people. I am confident that the whole history of the human race contains no such horrible episode as this. The great massacres and persecutions of the past seem almost insignificant when compared to the sufferings of the Armenian race in 1915. The killing of the Armenian people was accompanied by the systematic destruction of churches, schools, libraries, treasures of arts, and the cultural monuments in an attempt to eliminate all traces of a noble civilization with a history of more than 3,000 years. Whereas Adolf Hitler, in persuading his army commanders that the merciless persecution and killing of Jews, Poles, and other groups of people would bring no retribution, declared, who, after all, speaks today of the annihilation of the Armenians? And whereas by consistently remembering and forcefully condemning the atrocities committed against the Armenians and honoring the survivors as well as other victims of similar heinous conduct, we guard against repetition of those acts of genocide. And
whereas San Luis Obispo County is home to many Armenians who have enriched our county through their leadership in the fields of business, agriculture, academia, medicine, government, and the arts, and are proud and patriotic practitioners of American citizenship. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby designate April 24, 2005, as San Luis Obispo County Day of Remembrance of the Armenian Genocide of 1915 through 1923. With that, Ms. Vartanian will accept this resolution.
If you would care to say a few words, and then I have some other requests to speak for them. In the microphone, please.
That's her.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. My name is Huri Vartanian, Vartanian. Chairwoman Bianchi and honorable board members, on behalf of your Armenian-American constituents in San Luis Obispo County, I thank you for this timely proclamation. It was 90 years ago this week that the Armenian professionals of Istanbul, then Constantinople, were rounded up and murdered. It is also a fact that these victims of April 24, 1915 were the first of approximately 1.5 million Armenian men, women, and children to fall at the hands of the Ottoman Empire and the Young Turk regime in the next 8 years. Years later, historians labeled these events as the 20th century's first genocide. Every year, the largest Armenian population outside of the country of Armenia gather on April 24 to commemorate and recognize this genocide. City, county, and state governments honor these victims with resolutions such as this. And today, San Luis Obispo County joins them in recognizing this crime against humanity. Why do we find these resolutions so important? Well, even though modern-day Turkey was not the actual perpetrator of these crimes, it spends millions of lobby dollars in this country each year to fight recognition of the genocide. Of course, there exists no serious academic dispute about the Armenian Genocide. In fact, worldwide recognition exists. Various governments have documented the atrocities suffered by the Armenians, with extensive coverage found within our own national archives. U.S. Ambassador Henry Morgenthau, diplomat during World War I to the Ottoman Empire, described what he saw as race murder. He dedicated 4 complete chapters in his book, Ambassador Morgenthau's Story, to the suffering of the Armenians. He stated that he did not believe that the darkest ages ever presented scenes more horrible than those which now took place all over Turkey. A horrible event, a suffering of many people, in 90 years have passed. The Armenian people have no resolution. The victims feel their suffering goes unacknowledged by the perpetrator. This does matter. Imagine Poland today if Germany had not recognized the sufferings of the Holocaust. A great military power is your neighbor who committed unspeakable crimes in your shared history and refuses to acknowledge them. Resolution brings closure. This is just one reason why we feel resolutions such as this one are very important. Denial of genocide minimizes the great suffering of the people. It minimizes this race murder. Recognizing these crimes, recognizing the Armenian Genocide, helps to heal. It sends a clear message that the world will not sit silently and tolerate another genocide, another Holocaust. Thank you for paying homage to the memory of the innocent victims and honoring the courage of those who survived. On behalf of the Armenian American community of San Luis Obispo County, I would like to now honor a woman who remembers living in the shadows of the genocide. I would like to present this proclamation to Ms. Marie Ashajan. Thank you.
With that, the next speaker is Betsy Umhofer, followed by Debbie Arnold.
Chairwoman Bianchi and honorable members of the Board of Supervisors, it's an honor to be here today representing Congresswoman Lois Capps. The Congresswoman and other members of Congress have sent the following letter to President Bush, and I want to share it with you today. Dear Mr. President, we are writing to urge you to join us in reaffirming the United States record on the Armenian Genocide in your upcoming April 24th commemorative statement. This date marks the 90th anniversary of the systematic and deliberate campaign of genocide perpetrated by the Ottoman Empire in 1915. Over the following 8 years, 1.5 million Armenians were murdered, and more than 500,000 were forced from their homeland into exile. In the years since, descendants of Armenian immigrants have clung to their identity and have prospered across this nation and throughout the world. The United States is fortunate to be home to an organized and active Armenian community whose members contribute and participate in every aspect of civic life. By properly recognizing the terrible atrocities committed against the Armenian people as genocide in your statement, you will honor the many Americans who helped launch the unprecedented U.S. diplomatic, political, and humanitarian campaign to end the carnage and protect the survivors. The U.S. Ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Henry Morgenthau, acting on instructions from Secretaries of State Williams Jennings Bryan and Robert Lansing, protested the slaughter of the Armenians to the Ottoman leaders. Without our intervention, the Ottoman Empire's genocidal plan would have been even more lethal. As you have eloquently declared, Mr. President, Americans are blessed with freedom and security, but that good fortune brings with it an important responsibility. The United States must never allow crimes against humanity to pass without remembrance and condemnation. As U.S. efforts to aid victims of genocide continue, it is imperative that we pay tribute to the memory of others who have suffered and to never forget the past. By commemorating the Armenian genocide, we renew our commitment to prevent future atrocities and therefore negate the dictum that history is condemned to repeat itself. We look forward to your April 24 statement and, as always, stand ready to work with you on this and many other matters of importance to our nation. Sincerely, Lois Capps, Member of Congress, and additional members of Congress have also signed on to this.
Debbie Arnold, followed by Vicki Jansen.
Debbie Arnold, representing Assemblyman Sam Blakesley. And I have brought a resolution here today from the State Assembly, also recognizing April 24th as a day of remembrance of the Armenian Genocide. And our resolution reads something like this. Whereas the Armenian Genocide of 1915 is a part of history that saw the murder, torture, and exile of millions of innocent Armenian people, and whereas the Armenian Genocide is arguably one of the most horrific violations of human rights in the history of the world, whereas the 33rd Assembly District is home to many Armenians who are an important and integral part of local communities, and whereas remembering and honoring the survivors, as well as condemning the atrocities committed against the Armenians, serves to strengthen our resolve against the acts of genocide, now therefore be it resolved by Assemblymember Sam Blakesley that he joins the County of San Luis Obispo in recognizing April 24, 2005, as San Luis Obispo County's designated Day of Remembrance of the Armenian Genocide of 1915 to 1923.
Vicki Jansen, followed by Leon Maxudian.
Chairwoman Bianchi and Honorable Board, I'm Vicki Jansen, and I'm here to present a certificate from the Secretary of State. And in short, it reads, by token of the Great Seal, Secretary of State Bruce McPherson solemnly recognizes the 90th anniversary of Armenian Genocide and commends the Board of Supervisors for their resolution dedicating April 24, 2005 as the San Luis Obispo County Day of Remembrance of the Armenian Genocide of 1915-1923. And on a personal note, I'd like to say I could not be more proud or lucky than to work for Kacho Ashajian.
Leon Maxudian, followed by Thomas Apkarian.
Leon Maxudian, M-A-K-S-O-U-D-I-A-N. Ladies and gentlemen, The first genocide of the 20th century is one that has gone by largely unnoticed. Still denied by many Turks, the Armenian genocide of 1914 to 1918 accounts for the deaths of 1.5 million Armenians in the Ottoman Empire. The first step in this annihilation plan was to disarm the Armenians in the army, place them in labor battalions, and then kill them. Then on April 24, 1915, the Armenian political and intellectual leaders were gathered and killed. Finally, the remaining Armenians were called from their homes, often in a house-to-house search. Many men were shot immediately or thrown into prison, many to be tortured to death later. The rest of the men and the women and children were told they would be relocated and then marched off to concentration camps in the desert between Jarablus and Erzurum. Here they were starved and thirsted to death in the burning sun. Prisoners were starved, beaten, raped, murdered by unmerciful guards. Every Armenian in this room would attest to the reality of these facts. I myself would attest to the fact that two of my uncles were killed and many of my relatives were killed likewise. During the march, the Armenians were denied food and water. They were driven along by soldiers day by day on foot. They were beaten or left to die if they could not keep up with the caravan. The authorities in Trabzon and the Black Sea coast sometimes loaded Armenians on barges and threw them overboard. Some of the women on march were forced to strip naked and walk in this condition under the burning sun. Many other women were seized by Turkish officers or civilian officers and made a part of their harem. Others were sold in the market, as were many children. The Turkish government today denies that there was an Armenian genocide and claimed that the Armenians were only removed from the eastern war zone. The genocide, however, occurred all over Anatolia, present-day Turkey, and not just in the so-called war zone. At that time, the genocide was condemned by representatives of the United States, British, French, Russian, German, and Austrian governments. The presentations today is nothing that speaks about than the terrible and difficult times that our parents and grandparents did go through. All we ask is that the realities and the facts of the past history be not denied, but be accepted as fact and be recognized that indeed 1.5 million Armenians were massacred. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Thomas Epkarian, followed by Nishan Hanangian.
Good morning. I would like first off to thank the chairwoman and the board of supervisor for planning this moment to remember the millions of Armenians who lost their lives so many years ago. And in 3 minutes, I can't relate all the stories my grandmother told us a little bit. But I'm so grateful to my grandmother, who left Yerevan after losing her husband and family members and walked the desert for 2 years and then came to America with such faith, strength, and perseverance to start a new life. She lives on in my heart because of her faith, goodness, strength, and spirit of the Armenian people that she demonstrated all her life and demonstrated that her faith and perseverance in the United States government also. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Nishan Hanangian, followed by Chris Raymer.
Nishan Hanangian, journalism professor at Cal Poly. When Armenians first settled in Fresno in the 1870s, they saw it as the land of agriculture and opportunity. They called the area Yetem, the Garden of Eden. I know some people balk at that description of Fresno, but and became pioneers in the fig and grape industries. Today, more than 500,000 Armenian Americans call California home. Today, in Los Angeles alone, there are more newspapers in Armenian than in English. Consolidation in the industry has not hit us yet. Today in California, we have athletic teams, high schools, colleges, cultural organizations, dozens of churches, and even our own Central Coast Armenian Association, whose founding members are my wife Jenny and supervisor Sajjan's sisters Hasmik and Margot. While we have not forsaken our agricultural roots, we have branched out into medicine, academia, banking, politics, and even show business. We are a diverse group, hailing from Egypt, Greece, the former Soviet Union, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Iran. While we cannot forget the atrocities of the past and they should never be forgotten, our present cannot be held hostage to it either. We are eager and proud to participate in the building of California. We thrive in a state which celebrates tolerance and diversity. We continue to blend our traditions of the old world with the opportunities and freedoms that the new world allows to us. Thank you again, Board of Supervisors.
Hi, good morning. I'm Chris Raymer. I'm from Senator Abel Maldonado's office. Abel's asked me to come down here as he's in Sacramento. I've come here to talk about SB 424 in the Senate, which Abel supported with an aye vote on April 7th on the floor, and it reads in part, April 24th of each year shall be the California Day of Remembrance of the Armenian Genocide in memory of the 1.5 million victims who were subjected to torture, starvation, and murder, including death marches into the Syrian desert, by the rulers of the Ottoman Turkish Empire and the exile of more than 500,000 innocent people during the period from 1915 to 1923, inclusive and in honor of the survivors of those crimes against humanity. And I also have a certificate for you guys. So.
That was my last request to speak for Mr. Patterson. Do you have a comment?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to take the opportunity to thank Supervisor Sajjan for bringing this issue to the public and to this forum. Growing up in an agricultural community, I had the good fortune of being raised with three Armenian families and who farmed in that community, and they truly were good stewards of the land. And I think only through recognizing atrocities like this through human civilization that we can begin to change the way we treat each other and the way we act. In the United States, we talk a lot about celebrating diversity and tolerance, and certainly this is good reason to do that. And thank you, Supervisor Sajjan.
When I was 15, was when the first pictures of the Holocaust came to the United States. And from those pictures and those stories and the stories of the Armenian genocide is when I learned that we have to look at every other human being exactly the same way we would look at our own brothers, sisters, children, parents. They're no different. They may have a different religion, but they still love each other. They may have a different color, but they still love each other. And until all of us learn that within our own hearts and begin to live it, we will continue, unfortunately, to relive the past. And we really have to stop doing that. So thank you, Cacho. And if anyone wonders why I could pronounce the names, I lived in Fresno for 20 years. So I will go on to the next resolution, but if anyone wishes to leave, please do so as quietly as possible. Thank you. If Greg Thomas and Debbie Jo Trinidad would please come to the microphone. It gives me great pleasure to read the resolution designating the week of April 24th to 30th as National Infant Immunization Week, and the month of May 2005 to be designated Toddler Immunization Month. The following resolution is now offered and read. Whereas immunizations are our children's only defense against vaccine-preventable diseases, and whereas preventable childhood diseases still pose a serious threat to infants and toddlers, and complications of these diseases are often devastating to both patients and their families. And whereas California has witnessed an eradication of polio with complete immunization success, and as of June, just 6 cases of measles in 2004, it is important to recognize that childhood immunizations are one of the best ways to keep our children safe and healthy. And whereas a local coalition of concerned business, public health, and community organizations have joined together to observe National Infant Immunization Week, April 24th to 30th, 2005, and Toddler Immunization Month in May to bring attention to the need for timely immunizations. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the Board of Supervisors that the week of April 24 to 30, 2005, be designated National Infant Immunization Week, and the month of May 2005 be designated Toddler Immunization Month. Thank you.
For you, if you want to give them.
Dr. Thomas.
Good morning, Chairperson Bianchi and members of the Board of Supervisors. I thank you very much for this resolution today. There is a graph that we have given you this morning that shows very dramatically some of the effects of childhood vaccination. For example, prior to these infant immunizations, in an average year in California, we had 39,000 cases of measles. In 2004, we had 6 cases in California. Historically, we had 21,000 cases of pertussis, and we're still fighting that one. We had 1,148 cases last year. So this is a 95% reduction, but we're still working at it. And as mentioned, I'm proud to say that we had 0 polio cases last year and the year before. It's been quite a number of years, and I want to celebrate that April 12th was the 50th anniversary of the release of the polio vaccine. I remember it, and a few of you perhaps remember it. Haemophilus influenza, bacterial invasive disease, was something I remember as a resident taking care of children with Haemophilus meningitis and Haemophilus sepsis. And the graph is so graphic and shows the effectiveness of this vaccine that came out in the 1980s. In California as a whole, in 1990, even after several years of vaccination, we were dealing with 240 cases. We had two in the state of California last year. So I would like to thank you for recognizing the National Immunization Week. I'd like to recognize and thank the providers, the medical providers, who educate parents about the benefits of vaccine. I'd like to, for also vaccinating and sending reminders. And I'd like to thank the public health staff who work at education, maintaining a registry that has the capability of sending out reminders to parents to not only vaccinate them, but to avoid keeping track of the vaccines so that we don't repeat vaccinations unnecessarily. So the theme of this is this year, this campaign, is it's not magic, it's immunizations. And therefore, these wands are being given to many of the children who are being vaccinated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are these our magic wands?
These are the magic wands that
I think there's one missing. We can
are part of the campaign this year. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I have one comment, Mr. Shahjah.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Thomas. When you speak of polio, I just want to put in a plug for Rotarians around the world to raise $2 billion to immunize and put an end to polio for over 1 billion children worldwide.
I would also like to thank them and all the people working on eradication of these vaccine-preventable diseases.
With that, we have another resolution. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a resolution recognizing correctional officers and custody staff of the San Luis Obispo County Jail. Would you like to come forward with the Sheriff Hedges, please? The following resolution is now offered and read. Whereas the San Luis Obispo County houses approximately 500 inmates daily and books 12,000 arrests annually, and whereas the staff at the county jail is comprised of approximately 170 correctional officers, correctional technicians, legal clerks, food service personnel, medical and mental health practitioners, and whereas May 1st through 7th, 2005, will be recognized across the United States as National Correctional Officer Week, and whereas San Luis Obispo County will recognize all custody professionals for the important role they play in preserving public safety and maintaining a highly professional county jail, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors, in a regular meeting assembled on the 19th day of April 2005, recognize and appreciate the ongoing public service the correctional officers and custody staff provide to the residents of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Now, if you would like to make a comment, Sheriff Hedges.
Thank you. Good morning. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner. I would just like to add my thanks along with your recognition to the men and women who work at the county jail. While it's National Correctional Officers Week, we have many other folks in there that work with the correctional officers to make the San Luis Obispo County Jail operate at a very high standard. That includes our mental health folks, our medical folks, the folks that work in our kitchen, and then the professional staff that conduct the bookings that that you mentioned. It's a tremendous job that they do. It's a job that they do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and at times we are actually peaking over 600 inmates who would probably rather be someplace else, and they do an excellent job of working with them. To say a few words on behalf of our correctional officers, I have Lieutenant Barry Shorts.
My name is Correctional Lieutenant Barry Shorts. I oversee jail operations. I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors and Sheriff Hedges. I accept this proclamation on behalf of all the hard-working men and women of the Custody Division who serve this county with pride and professionalism 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thank you.
Thank you for all that you do. Is there anyone else of you that would like to make a comment? I see no one leaping forward to the microphone. So with that, that concludes our presentation calendar for today. And now is the time for the public to make comments on any item that is not on the agenda for today. The first person is Julie Rodewald, and the second person is Jesse Arnold.
Good morning. I'm Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I wanted to joyfully report that the County Clerk Recorder is open for business at the new Government Center at 1055 Monterey Street. I think, as everyone knows, moving an office can be an overwhelming task, and it is a testament to the coordination and planning that went into this project that our office was able to move over the weekend and be open for business on Monday at 8 o'clock without any disruption in services to our customers. Well, I take that back. There were some minor disruptions in services to our customers, but they had to wait a little bit longer for things on Monday morning. But I do want to thank the departments that were instrumental in making this happen, our General Services and Information Technology departments. And I understand that this will sound a little bit like an Oscar acceptance speech, but there are some people that I personally would like to thank. Creed Bruce and Greg McDougall from General Services, from our IT department, Pam Mundell and Julie O'Brien, who are our phone coordinators, Jeff Fitzsimmons, Ben Farrington, and Mark Ehlers, who are on the networking team. They were available over the weekend to help us out, to get us ready for Monday. Melissa Carey from IT assisted our setup on Sunday. I'd also like to thank the Clerk Recorder's IT staff, both Chuck Carey and Monica McKnight, who worked almost all day on Sunday to ensure that our programs and computers were up and running. I even had a friend stop by, a special thanks to him. He stopped by innocently and said, "Do you need any help?" And I think I put him to work for about 4 hours. That was Dennis Coden, and I do appreciate his help. And last but not least, I'd like to thank the staff of the Clerk Recorder's office. They've spent the last 3 weeks boxing up everything, labeling boxes, labeling filing cabinets, and right now they're unpacking boxes, trying to find boxes that they need to unpack, and continuing to serve our customers, and they've done it all by maintaining their sense of humor during a pretty stressful time. So we're looking forward to getting settled over the next few weeks and welcoming the other departments as they move into the building, and hopefully we'll be welcoming the five of the board members as they move in a few short weeks also. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me tell you, we can hardly wait. The next person is Jesse Arnold, followed by Eric Greeney.
Thank you, Chairman Bianchi and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I'm here to speak on genetic engineering and to remind you once again that the proponents of BT corn have still not shown me any long-term study showing that BT corn is safe for people to eat or safe for the environment. So I'm still looking for that. Thanks for letting me know that genetic engineering will be on your agenda in the future. When you get your reports from the Health Commission and the Ag Commission. However, whether those panels come in with pro or con or neutral on genetic engineering, your board could go ahead and take a stand on labeling. That doesn't need to wait for those other reports. So I would urge you to go ahead and put that on the agenda sooner, because these other reports could take another 6 months or more to come in. So in my remaining time here, I would just like to quote some material from a book called Genetically Engineered Food by Ronnie Cummins and Ben Lilliston. And they talk about several myths about genetic engineering. Number one is the myth that gene splicing and genetic engineering are precise and therefore predictable and safe. In fact, scientists understand very little about the biological function of most of the genetic material in plants, animals, and humans. Geneticists use the term junk DNA to describe the 97% of genetic material whose role in living organisms is not yet understood. Research in genetics tells us that individual genes do not operate in isolation, whereby one gene causes one and only one biological trait and gives rise to a uniform pattern of biochemical activity. But rather, genes interact in a complex manner, changing their behavior in relation to influences from other genes in their own organism, as well as being affected by other living organisms in their environment. Myth number two, genetically engineered foods have increased nutritional value. In fact, although genetic engineering companies have been promising us a cornucopia of more nutritious foods for almost two decades, no GE food currently on the market has been shown to be more nutritious or to taste better than non-GE foods. The overwhelming majority of GE crops, soybeans, corn, canola, cotton, potatoes, tomatoes, have been genetically altered to survive being sprayed with specific highly toxic broad-spectrum herbicides, that's referring to the Roundup Ready crops, or to produce their own insecticides, such as BT corn, or to have an increased shelf life, that's referring to the Flavor Saver tomato, which didn't work out and is off the market. This has nothing to do with nutrition or taste. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Eric Greening, and that's my last request to speak for him for public. I was going to ask you, you wanted public comment. Okay. Go ahead, Eric.
I am Eric Greening, and I would also like to thank you for recognizing the Armenian Genocide. This civilization, 3,000 years old, did indeed bring tremendous agricultural gifts to this country, and those gifts were indeed the product of seeds they had saved over those 3,000 years as they gradually developed and improved their crops and brought them to this country. That they first settled in the Fresno area around California is no accident. Their civilization is based on the runoff from Mount Ararat, which unfortunately is not in the country that now is recognized as Armenia today, but is within and is indeed the center of their historic nation, and perhaps they'll have it back someday. But the clean, clear water running off of Mount Ararat into the fertile valleys was to some extent duplicated by the clean, clear water running off of the Sierra into the Central Valley. And so they were able to bring the crops that they had developed over thousands and thousands of years to enrich our American agriculture. Genocide can have another definition, because genes are indeed how information is carried on from generation to generation, not only in humans, but in all organisms. And when we turn loose in the environment, or allow to be turned loose, negligently allow to be turned loose in the environment, things that will contaminate the transmission of these genes from generation to generation, whether it be in humans or in crops, where it will smudge and erase and vandalize the product of thousands of years of civilization, of careful stewardship, of selecting the best seeds each year and planting them again. If that is allowed to be vandalized, that is a type of genocide as well. And so I second all of the concerns raised by Jesse Arnold and do look forward to this getting on an agenda for some protective action, because what we're protecting is not only crops, but the values of all of the civilizations that have brought the crops to us that we enjoy today. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. Istar Holiday, and that's my last request to speak for.
I confused you. I gave two requests. One I will be speaking on this afternoon.
And
this has nothing to do with an agenda item. As long as I'm here, my name is Estar Holliday. I live on the Napoma Mesa at 577 Sheridan Road. And I'd like to speak to the board, Madam Chairman and Honored Board, about two practices by the county that have negatively affected the quality of life on the Napoma Mesa. The first is the practice of in-lieu fees, in which developers are allowed to pay a certain amount of cash towards the mitigation of the negative impact of their projects on the community in which they plan this project. In the years since that has been in practice, it just has not worked, and the taxpayer has picked up a large portion of the necessary mitigations, the necessary improvements that would soften the negative impacts of these projects. So I urge you to discontinue the principle of in-lieu fees and instead require developers to actually create the improvements that are required to soften the negative impacts. If they plan to run away with the profits, they certainly should absorb the costs and not ask the community to do that for them. The other problem, and it's not a practice, I understand it's a staffing problem, is the lack of enforcement of zoning violations. We have in many instances, reported to the zoning department, the Planning Department Zoning Code Enforcement Division, violations, severe violations of zoning. For example, there are suburban residential lots that have been turned into storage facilities for agricultural equipment, many trucks with pipes and other agricultural equipment that farmers store in a suburban residential community on a lot that is zoned for that. The zoning enforcement officer tries desperately to work on that, but there is just simply inadequate staff, inadequate time to enforce that, and the neighborhoods are deteriorating as a result of that. Violations of the law should be punished and or rectified, at least, and I urge you to consider that problem at the county level. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no other request to speak forms for public comment. So with that, I will close it to the public, and we will move on to the consent agenda. And I have two requests to speak forms for the consent agenda. First is Mel Hahn. The second is Eric Greeney.
Madam Chairman and board members, my name is Mel Hahn. I live here in the city of San Luis Obispo. I represent the Jansen property in Upper Lopez Canyon. You previously received a copy of a letter from our attorney, Warren Sinsheimer, who represents the Jansen and the Mano properties, stating our position on the proposed abandonment. I am also speaking today on behalf of Dr. Mano, who was unable to attend the meeting. Right now, the main concern of Dr. Mano and myself are the right to continuing access to our properties if the road is abandoned. The property owners affected by the proposed abandonment have been working on an access easement agreement. Mr. Carmel has presented a draft agreement which is being reviewed by the respective attorneys for the Jansen, Mano, and Rigetti properties. Also, the affected property owners need to know physically exactly where the proposed gate is to be located and who owns that property. If it is on the forestry property, how will the property owners acquire the right of access over the forestry property? This would also require establishing the location of the property line of the forest boundaries. Also, whose property does the southerly terminus of the proposed vacation lie on? Dr. Mano and myself feel there is still much work to be done by all parties involved before the proposed vacation should move forward in the vacation process. The property owners and attorneys are working diligently to resolve their concerns. Adequate time for all this to be done is always a problem. Therefore, Dr. Mano and myself respectfully request that the board pull this item from the agenda until such time as the property owners have an acceptable access easement agreement between themselves and have satisfied themselves of the concerns mentioned. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Eric Greeney.
I'm Eric Greening on items B16 and B19. B16 is a contract with Lou Rosenberg for various geological services. I'm very much in favor of having him work for or with the county. Your decisions have benefited from his independent analysis and review. The question this contract raises is, what happened to the county employee position of county geologist? I'd like to thank Supervisor Bianchi for her tireless advocacy to create the position in the first place. Once it was finally established within the planning department, I had assumed it would continue to be filled. With Mr. Rosenberg on a contract basis, is the employee position now vacant? Is Mr. Rosenberg available to us a sufficient amount of time under this contract to meet all our needs for independent review and analysis? What is the long-term future of the county geologist staff position? And I'd say the hard-won county geologist staff position. Item B19 represents our adjustment to the harsh realities, or should we say fantasies, turned into realities of the state budget. The staff report says that $1,692,935 is being shifted to the state from board-governed special districts, and we can anticipate a similar hit next fiscal year. Is this a consequence of Prop 1A, and if so, can we be assured that next fiscal year is the last time the state will suction these funds into its giant maw? Or do we need to activate a lobbying effort specific to seeing that this nonsense is stopped? It's one thing to absorb the consequences, which this agenda item does. It's another to confront the problem head on, which we strenuously need to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. I have one last request to speak for him. Tim Carmel.
Honorable Chair, members of the board, my name is Tim Carmel. I represent the applicants for your item B3, the proposed vacation of a portion of Upper Lopez Canyon Road. The applicants have been working diligently to resolve all private property access issues, have made great strides in doing so. This has been an ongoing process for about the past 3 months. There's plenty of time for the parties to address very minimal issues that are left with regard to this matter. Urge the board to adopt the resolution of intention so that we can keep this matter on track and hopefully address it on May 24th, where all these issues will come before the board and be subject to discussion. Thank you. Be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you for your comments. With that, I will close it to the public for public comment. Mr. Patterson, do you wish to pull any items?
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Lenthal.
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Shajan.
Just a comment on item number 3.
Okay.
Do it now.
I also want just to warn staff to on item B16 for clarification and item B19 for a comment from staff. No separate motion. Just clarification. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Smith, if you care to comment, feel free. From early on, when I worked with Mr. Carmel and the neighbors, it was agreed that the only way we're going to make this happen, that all property owners have access and have a signed lease agreement for easement for everyone to not be blocked out of their properties. I'm sure that's what's in the works. And this is not a hearing item today. We still have 30 more days. If there are any misunderstandings, I'll be more than happy to work with all parties concerned and looking forward to our May 24th hearing to see what happens there. And if we still have problems there, that's not the do-or-die situation. We can always postpone it for a future date. But I look forward to hear from all the folks on May 24th to see what we have accomplished. Mr. Smith?
Well, thank you, Supervisor Shajian. I think that covers about everything. This is a consent agenda item setting forth that, and there will be activities and meetings to get this resolved. The appropriate arena will be on the 24th of May if this passes. Thank you.
Okay, with that, Mr. Nall, would you like to comment on, or sorry, Ellen, I didn't see you back there.
that's okay. Ellen Carroll, Environmental Coordinator. The question's about item B16, our geology position. We are continuing. Our geology position is a really important position in our department, and Eric's right. We worked hard to get that position. It's vacant right now. While we figure out how to refill that position, we are contracting with Mr. Rosenberg to continue our geology program. It's a difficult position to fill. We've recruited once, and we will probably be recruiting again for that position.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, if I may ask, has he moved out of the area? Is he here only for part-time?
He has moved to, yes, out of the area and is here part-time.
Okay. But he telecommutes.
Yes, he does. But he also is here. There's a lot of field work that needs to be done, and he is here in the office and in the field doing that work.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't give it up, Eric. It took me long enough to get it.
On B19, Madam Chair, I can speak to that. The item itself is, I think as Eric understood, it's a procedural item, moving money around in response to a state takeaway. It's not a result of 1A. It's a result of the state, at least the governor's professed 2-year takeaway of revenues from local government as part of his budget issue last year. Proposition 1A, the passage of 1A, should ensure that it is limited to a 2-year process. For those of you that remember, 1A was the one that essentially said it will protect this local government revenue stream, and under the terms of that particular proposition, this takeaway cannot continue without specific processes and declarations of emergency by the state to continue it. And before they can issue a new emergency declaration, they actually have to repay money that's owed from the prior emergency move. And we think that's unlikely, so we believe that this will indeed end after next fiscal year.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, I have no other items to pull or comment on. May we have a motion, please?
Move approval of the consent agenda items.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, we are going to take a 15-minute break before we start our regular morning schedule. We will return at 25 after. I'll give us 2 extra minutes.